Welcome back, Apple Sox fans, to the Wenatchee Apple Sox podcast. My name is Jackson Dodd. Today, very special guest today. We got Joe Thornton. Joe, thanks for joining today.
Thanks for having me, Jackson.
Of course, man. You know, first question, been a while since we've talked to you. What have you been up to since that season end?
Same old, just playing a lot of baseball, man. Settling into a new program at Gonzaga. And it's been an absolute blessing, a blessing that I wouldn't have experienced without the help of, you know, Coach Mitch and the Apple Sox. So things are going well, though.
That's awesome, man. And how's that first season there?
It's good. It's good. Kind of dealt with a little bit of injury issues in the fall, kind of carrying over from the end of the summer. But we got that all ironed out and knocked on wood real quick. And we actually start up tomorrow. So this is the last thing I do before I go to bed a little bit earlier because we got 6 a.m. weights. So,
yeah, man. So what's that preparation looked like from working through fall, winter, and now starting tomorrow?
Well, I'll say this. It's definitely been a big step up coming from Spokane Falls.
Yeah.
Where and it's been honestly a lot of the factors around baseball, not just baseball itself, right?
Yeah.
Because at the Falls, you know, I'm all online, right? And living's a little bit more convenient. So I could structure my whole day. Practice would be at 12 and I'd be all online for school. So I wouldn't have to worry about that. Lifts was on your own.
Yeah.
And it really benefited me, but I could go, okay, every morning I woke up, it's like, okay, everything's about baseball.
Yeah.
Here at Gonzaga, you know, we have 6 a.m. weights, and then we have mandatory classes that I have to go to from, you know, 8 to 2:15, and then I hop into baseball. So
yeah,
it was a big adjustment, especially at first, kind of keeping my priorities straight, because especially the first couple of weeks, month or so, of baseball, I'd show up and practice would be at the end of my day, and I'd be a little sluggish, but it's been fantastic. It's built a lot of character and built a lot of discipline that I needed.
That's awesome, man. And how has it been different so far from Spokane Falls, obviously with the school side of it, but also with the preparation, the level of play, all that sort of stuff?
Oh, it's phenomenal. I'm really excited to see how we do this year. Obviously my first year at the Division I level. But this has definitely been, without question, the best team I've ever been on. We got guys that swing at 1 through 9. We got one guys that can pitch at 1 through, I don't know how many carry, 13, 14. So it's been so sweet to go and compete against these guys. But you know, I got all the love in the world for the Falls and the NWAC. It's made me the ball player I am today. So
yes, sir. And so what's that recruiting process like? Because you got recruited to Gonzaga halfway or maybe beginning of the Apple Sox season. How did that recruiting process look like for you? As I know it's kind of different for everybody.
Well, it was kind of crazy. I'm not going to lie. I wasn't really planning on getting recruited. I'm a redshirt sophomore, so I was planning on coming back to Spokane for my third year. And it was actually the Edmonton series. I was sitting next to Noah Fields. We had just touched down. And not 2 minutes after I turned off my my airplane mode, I get a phone call from an unknown Spokane number. And at this time, I was having trouble renewing my lease with my apartments next to the Falls. And I was like, oh my gosh, this again. So I kind of pick it up and I'm like, I wasn't mean, but I wasn't like, you know, as energetic and outgoing.
Yeah.
And I was like, how's it going? And my sheer, hey, Joe, Mark Maktoff here with the Gonzaga Bulldogs. I've been talking to your coach and I want to see you come play sometime. And that definitely caught me off guard. And so like, I was like, well, coach, we're in Edmonton right now. And he kind of paused for a few seconds. He's like, got anywhere closer than that? So it was very fortunate. After the Edmonton trip, we went down to Bellingham, and he was flying back from L.A., so he's already on the west side.
Oh, perfect.
So we linked up there, and I had a pretty good outing there. I was coming back from a little bit of a pec impingement. So I had some nerves there, but I came into a pretty high leverage situation, first and second. No one out. Turned a double play on a bunt, pop up. And got out of it, and then it was just not the best conditions, but I grew through it. It was rainy and cold, and I think he liked that quite a bit. Because I had with the conditions room to make excuses, and I was able to figure it out. And then we got back that was the third game of that trip. So we got back at like 3 a.m. that next morning, and so I slept in. And I get a call at like 9 a.m. from my pitching coach at the Falls. And that's what woke me up. And If you know Coach Grimes, he talks pretty fast, so it's kind of hard to keep up to him when I was really tired. But he calls me up, and I'm like, "Morning, Coach." And he says, "Hey, Joe, can you tell me about your injury your freshman year? I think the Zags are going to offer here quite a right a few minutes." So that caught me off guard. But yeah, Mac called about 30 minutes after that, made me a pretty good offer. And then I called just about everyone I could think of, because this is the second Division One baseball player from my town's history. Like, that's just kind of a it's just unknown ground for me. So I called every resource I had, and everyone, said, "Go for it, man." And Gonzaga was a school I wanted to go to out of high school, so it's just pretty surreal. And I committed later that day, so it was my recruiting cycle was about 7 hours. So, but it was fine, and it's been an absolute blessing to come here. So.
That's awesome, man. And what's it like? I didn't even know that you were the second person ever from Tenasket to actually go to the D1 level. What was that like?
Pretty crazy. The first one was Michael Call in the early 80s. I still think he has the saves record at Spokane Falls, another Sasquatch. And he went to UW, actually, so shout out Carson Bozal. But yeah, I mean, it's even going the JUCO route, just college athletics in general, coming from a smaller town, it's something that's not as common. And there's a lot of talent in Tenasket and Okanagan County in general. It's just harder to get that exposure, right? When you're coming from a 2B school. So, I'm very fortunate. I've been given a lot of just fantastic mentors, whether that's Coach Webb, Coach Vassar, all throughout the county, just really supporting me, and hopefully I can be something of a guide for the future generations.
Yeah, of course. And we mentioned before the pod that Carson Swim's also there at Gonzaga with you, your Apple Sox teammate. What's it like having him down there with you?
Oh, I love Swim, man. He's a great kid. He's actually upstairs right now. We have a few guys over watching that football game. Hopefully not. It's not Rogers' last, but Swim is just fantastic. Really showing me the ropes of the program. Because that was another thing. Like, even when I went to Spokane Falls, I knew Reese Vassar and Carson Bogle and Noah Lowe, a few guys around there. So like, it was a new program, but it wasn't like I knew some of the guys. Like, I was completely going in.
Yeah, of
And I
course.
didn't have a visit here. I didn't meet the guys last year or anything, so I just kind of showed up. So Swim's been fantastic in making me feel at home. We go to church together quite a bit. So he's just a fantastic guy to pick his brain. And obviously, I mean, you've seen the stuff firsthand. He's probably one
Yes,
of the best
sir.
pitchers I've ever seen, with high draft upside. And I think he pitched on Saturday, and I don't know if I'm supposed to reveal the numbers, but he was putting up some disgusting stuff, and I'm expecting a big year out of him. So.
That's awesome, man. That's not even surprising. And so, back to the Sox now. This is your second season, Wenatchee. How was it just first off for you?
Well, I wish I would have been healthier longer, but it was just fantastic. I was on the podcast last year. The Apple Sox means a lot to me. Growing up in a small town 2 hours north of there, the Apple Sox was the closest thing you could get to the professional baseball before going over to Seattle, right? So to be able to put on that jersey that so many of the good ball players from Okanagan County have put on, it was an absolute privilege. And then to be able to be put in some high leverage situation and deliver more times than not. There were some failures in there, but it was just fantastic.
Yeah,
And
of course. And you mentioned growing up in Tenasket. What's it like just being actually somewhat so close to home as other guys who are in California and their families all the way down there? What's it like being pretty close?
oh, it's an absolute blessing. Especially with summer, the days are a little bit longer, so being able to see my dad come down at least twice a week, often. My sister and her husband, they were my host family in Wenatchee. Shout out to Grant Colton. So just this great support system. And then, just being in the agriculture world, there's a lot of agriculture families in Wenatchee. So knowing the Riggins and stuff like that, it just felt like home. So it was fantastic. Definitely had it easier than a guy like, Saki, whose family, is in Hawaii. So, very fortunate there.
Yeah, of course. And One of my favorite moments this season is I don't know what trip it was. We're traveling back. It's just dead of night. And you're behind me and you're just giving me the whole entire tour. It's like, all right, this family lives here. This is the go-to spot on a Friday night. This is our only movie theater. And I just thought it was so sick, man, because obviously you're only up in Wenatchee, not the biggest town, obviously. But just seeing that, all the spots reminded me of Radiator Springs. And you're like Tom Mater, and you're just showing us around.
I wish I had Tomater's accent, but yeah, dude. Hey, Wenatchee's the big city where I'm coming from. That's the closest Costco. All right, that's when we're feeling like spending the big bucks, we make a Wenatchee run.
Oh man, that's perfect. And Quincy too, you grew up with Quincy. What's it like having him as your coach?
Well, he's fantastic. He's like a bigger brother to me. And he struck me out in high school, so I better listen to what he says. But yeah, he's just it was a little weird getting some mound visits from him. I'm gonna be honest. I'm gonna be honest. But I try to give him his respect. But he's just, I mean, one of the best pitchers in WCL history. Fantastic college career. And he's wise beyond his years. He's really helped me with my mentality, pitching wise, just having confidence in what I throw, that it's gonna be good enough. And reminding me that hitting's hard, and just admire the heck out of him, especially being a guy, wasn't gifted with the highest level of velo, but he would just figure it out. He was just an absolute dog. Being able to play with him 2 years ago and then be coached by him last year, it was really a full circle moment. And hopefully I've instilled some of his teachings.
Yes, sir. And also I think he's a big part of your rehab as you had that kind of pec strain throughout. How'd you bounce back from that at the beginning of the season?
Well, it was something that it was a weight room injury that I agitated. And it was weird because I strained my pec warming up in that Kelowna game, so early on in the season. And I actually went out there and I PR'd, which is crazy. But then I paid for the price for it, the coming weeks after that. But Quincy was awesome. I was stressing, like, because I only had two outings there, and I was like, shoot, are they gonna find someone else? I'm gonna lose a lot of. And he's like, hey, look, it's gonna be fine. He gave me the number of his old PT guy, Sean and Brewster. Sent me down there a few times, and he was fantastic. Gave me a lot of stretches. Quincy did, being another guy that's dealt with injuries in his career too, to have me do before a game, and always picking my brain every day, making sure that I am not, because I'm a guy that chomps at the bit. That's been probably the hardest part about pitching. As a two-way guy, right? As a hitter, I feel like I can just hit all day. As a pitcher, you only have a finite matter of throws each day, right? So being able to maximize those and not waste those, he really helped me out with that. Some of the stretches he had me doing were pretty goofy, but they were effective. And then, he gave me an opportunity, right when I got back down to Edmonton in a high leverage situation, to get back there. And that time, unfortunately, it came up a little bit short. But he stuck with me, and it turned into a really, really good summer. And yeah, I owe him a lot.
Earlier, obviously, two-way player. What's it like to be a two-way player both at the high level and in the WCL?
That's a good question. It's an honor. It's really tough. I find myself kind of getting tired sometimes, but it's also a good reminder that, hey, look, if it was easy, everyone would do it, right?
Course.
Definitely coming from the NWAC and the WCL, love me some metal bats. That is fantastic. And the resources are just all there. And it just goes back to what I was saying earlier about discipline, though. Because you only have 24 hours in a day, and pitching in itself is a big time commitment, and then you throw in hitting, that's another big time commitment. So you have to be able to be efficient with your reps and not tire yourself out. And I didn't get the at bats last year in the WCL that I was really hoping for, but I think I did a pretty good job of getting out there and competing.
Yeah, of course.
But I will say my favorite thing about two-way is, and I think it's my biggest advantage as a pitcher, is because every time I two-way, every at bat, I'm reminded just of how hard hitting is. I'll be sitting in, and I'll take one. It's a 91 on the corner. I'm like, dude, how am I supposed to hit that? So it gives me confidence when I'm pitching and I'm up and I'm down 2-0. It's like I'm gonna throw the sucker over the plate. Like it's, even though he knows the fastball's coming, it's still going to be hard to hit it, you know?
Yeah, of course.
And that's one thing I think I see a lot of guys who have been pitching only for a while is they forget, like, you still got to hit it.
Yeah.
And it's hard. And even if you hit it well, there's going to be, you know, eight guys trying to catch the ball. So, yeah, it's pretty cool.
Yeah, and so this year for the Sox, I got the stats pulled up here. You had a 1.77 ERA, 17 strikeouts, only eight walks, and you led the team in saves with three. How are you able to stay so consistent throughout the mound and in those high leverage situations? Because I feel like whenever there was a really tight game, you were always the guy to go and deliver for the Sox.
It's been a lot of, I don't know. You just got to want to be the guy. You got to psych yourself into thinking this is the situation I want. You know, when you're in those long lifts in the winter, like, and you're thinking about what keeps you going, like this, you got to be thinking, hey, this is going to help me in those high leverage situations. And when you get thrown in those high leverage situations, you got to enjoy it, but you also got to seize the moment. And that's also, I owe a lot of credit to, you know, Coach Webb at the Falls and my old pitching coach, Matty Oy, because when I was redshirting my freshman year, to kind of keep me in the game during our midweek scrimmages and stuff, I'd go out and I'd say, hey, Matty, you know, give me second and third, one out. And give us our three-hole hitter up. I want to figure it out, you know? So I've been very fortunate to, in practice, be given a lot of high-leverage situations. Sometimes they're almost a little impossible, but it makes them in game feel a lot more doable. And it's as cliche as it gets, but you just got to breathe, too. And just take a deep breath, take a step back, don't speed yourself up. Yeah, and that's been a big help for me.
And you mentioned as a pitcher and batter at the same time, you had an advantage on the mound, knowing kind of how hard hitting is. When you're at the plate, was there a certain advantage you had knowing kind of what a pitcher was thinking to try and get you out?
I'm going to be honest with you, Jackson. And anyone who knows the way I hit, the less I think, the better, if I'm being honest, because it works the opposite way. I'm like, okay, dude, he's got to be throwing me a slider here. And then he'll throw a fastball middle. And it's like, well, I just wasted that pitch. So that's one thing I just try to focus on my breathing when I hit. Maybe my coaches don't want to hear that, but that's honestly my approach. I'm there just to swing it. And yes, the less I think, the better when I'm hitting, at least.
At the end of the day, you delivered. I mean, you were 4 for 10 with 10, obviously batting 400 at that point. You had three walks, 571 on base percentage. How were you able to stay like so consistent actually on base? I mean, you didn't have a ton of ABs, but in your time, you made do with that time.
Well, I would say, aside from my love of the game, I think my biggest strength is competing. I don't like losing, and I'm gonna fight tooth and nail to the end. And that's one thing. I don't strike out a lot, so you know, I think I've got a lot of fight in me, and that's where I go back to, like, my redshirt freshman year. You know, being put in these tough situations and just learning how to figure it out. You know, I'm a guy that I get really wide with two strikes. I simplify, and I'm just there to compete. And I'm not a big power guy, right? So my whole job is just to pass the baton to the next guy. So I'm gonna fight and figure out whatever way I can just to get to first base, and then the guys behind me can do the damage. And it's kind of the same thing when I'm pitching. Like, I don't know, I don't care if I'm 84 or 93 that day. Like, I'm just gonna try to figure out how to get outs one, two, and three. I don't really care about how I get there, you know?
Yeah, of course.
So yeah, just trying to compete.
Yeah, and so another one of my favorite moments this year was pretty sure it was your first hit was a bunt single. I don't remember exactly where, and I think they counted it as an error or a fielder's choice. And I remember talking to you after the game. I'm like, Joe, that was definitely a hit. That was most definitely a hit. And so in my book, you are batting 500. I know it says 4 for 10, but you're batting 500 because of that bunt single that snuck through. I don't know how it wasn't counted a hit, but I just want to say that to you now that Joe, in my books, you're batting 500.
I appreciate that, and I wanted to be put out there. That was my first ever in-game bunt attempt, and Mitch gave me the sign. I forget what the sign was, but I just started laughing to the catcher, and he was like, "Dude, you're bunting, aren't you?" And I was like, "Nah." And then I squared around, and the first pitch was 91 at my face, so I fell down to the ground. I did a little somersault. It was just so unserious. It was first and second, no one out. And I was literally verbally saying, get it down, get it down, get it down, get it down. And there was no finesse on that bunt. I hit that thing. I was just
Yeah,
white knuckle
you
with the
just
bat.
smacked it.
It was a push bunt. It was a push sacrifice, I guess. But I got on first base, you know? A little
Yeah.
miscommunication by the Falcons there, but I was laughing it up. I had a teammate on Kelowna there, and they knew I don't bunt, so they were giving me a hard time too. But that was awesome. I appreciate you saying that. That was one of
Of
my
course,
favorite
man. Of
baseball.
course. And so also this year, you were selected as the All-Star game along with Mitch Haythorn, Cade Martinez, and Carson Boozel. What was that experience like this year?
Oh, it was by far the highlight of the summer. Going down to Bellingham, and again, being really close to Quincy. Quincy was an All-Star the year before. So I got to hear about that experience. I watched Quincy last year in the All-Star game. So to be able to be on that field was just so cool. And it actually really worked out well because Coach Nags, Ed Nags with the Bells, was there. And I got to meet him. He's a Wenatchee legend. So that's how I knew him, actually. But now he's our assistant coach at Gonzaga. So it was a good chance for him to see me play. And then to close out that game, it's probably a top three baseball moment, like memory of mine. To be in that situation, you know, sold out crowd. Ryan Roland Smith's calling the game with the MLB Network, who I grew up watching. And then I let two guys get on, which I don't love, but I got to punch out the guy to end the game, so that worked out well. And I got to keep the ball. I kept the ball and I gave it to my dad. So.
That's awesome, man. And also, really busy weekend, but I know there was fun events you guys did. So what were those extra steps you did to fill time during that week?
I loved they did a little luncheon thing like on a little Bay Area from I'm forgetting the name of the restaurant, but they did a fantastic job of catering that, and they did some announcements. A guy came in and talked, and it was fantastic. Loved that. Got to meet up with some old NWAC guys that were there, like Logan Shepherd, and just getting to catch up with them. Because a lot, you know, happens from especially the transfer portal now with the end of NWAC season in May to where we were in July. People moving around, and then just driving around and getting closer to Mitch and Cade and obviously Bozal. It was so sick.
Oh, man.
Yeah, that was pretty much it.
That's awesome, dude. And also this year, you started another thing, Joe on the Go, your interview series with the Apple Sox. How was that?
That was fun. I don't know if that was Olivia or Dylan that came up with that idea, but it kept things lighthearted and fun. And I
Yeah.
it was a good deal. I think Swim was my first interview. So that was also really cool to have that with him. And yeah, it was just fun. I don't know what else to say other than that, but it kept me on my feet because I'd have to come up with questions all the time. So it made me pay attention to guys a little bit more to know a little bit more about them. So to ask them a little bit more personal questions. So that was very beneficial.
If you can remember, what was your favorite interview that you did?
I mean, oh, I loved Swim a lot because he did the seal, that one. He did that. That was pretty funny. Sanko gave a funny interview. Because I wasn't like super close with Sanko. We got along, but like we just never like found ourselves hanging out outside of baseball. So to get into pick his brain a little bit, and I think we incorporated Mitch there a little bit, Darlington. That one was really fun. I'd probably say Sanko, actually.
That's tough, man. And last question. Overall, in your 2 years with the Sox, what's been your favorite moment that you've had here?
I'd say personal would be closing out the All-Star game. That meant a lot to me. But for team, I would say my first year here, Bucevich closed out the North Championship at Paul Thomas. And I was getting ready in the bullpen, and it was like a full count, bases loaded type situation. He punched the guy out to win by one run. And that was so cool. And that was during the Cam Hoyland legacy run. So that was fun.
That's awesome, man. Joe, I want to thank you again for joining the podcast today and talking to us. And it was great seeing you, bro.
Absolutely. I appreciate you, Jackson.
Of course, man, Apple Sox fans, make sure to stay tuned for your next episode of the One Apple Sox podcast.